This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Bent Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night.
My special guest on Bent Notes is a drummer, composer, arranger, music producer and sound recording engineer. With a career spanning more than 30 years, Nico Schoblay has performed around the world, starting in Germany, where he was born, before settling in Australia, where we have been the very happy recipients of his music across the concert stage, television, and, of course, the jazz clubs for many years. It's my pleasure to bid a very warm Bent Notes welcome to Nico Schoblay.
Thank you, David. Great to be back.
Nico, you've been composing, performing, and recording, both as a musician and a recording engineer, for many years. When you started on your musical journey, what was your musical dream?
I was playing. I was playing the drums. I started on the piano, but then added the drums and stuck with the drums because it's much easier to play. A musical dream. I think I had the idea that there were, you know, to play with some of the people that I loved listening to, and. Together with that, I always sort of was interested in composing or writing music to see how music works together in the band. So I've always, even with my first band at school, I was starting to write songs. And even in music class, we were encouraged to write compositions, which was interesting. Not sure how much that happens these days.
I don't remember that happening in my music classes, but it's a nice way to go because it must develop a good understanding about how things go together.
Yes, it was an encouragement to look at how things are put together musically. It might have also been a particular teacher that, hard to believe now, but we were talking about, or she was presenting us with works by Penderecki, a Polish composer, a very contemporary composer. We were then told if we could write a small composition for whatever instruments we wanted. So I wrote one for empty yogurt tins and pans. And I still remember that. I think it was a terrific thing to do. I might have been the only person to write, or at least for yogurt tins.
What better way to develop one's skill set than choose something that's a little challenging?
Absolutely, yeah, and a bit out there. You can make music on anything you want, like even drums.
Even saucepans. Saucepans is my drum.
My first drum kit consisted of a whole lot of, sort of found objects and empty boxes and whatever. And then if I wanted to write down, I remember now, I would remember trying to write compositions, and I didn't know how to notate for drums. So I gave each item a letter, A, B, C, D, and so forth, and wrote compositions. I don't know how, but that was the idea.
Oh, what a way to go.
Yes. My early work.
I hope you've got some preserved somewhere in the archives.
No, I don't, unfortunately.
Well, moving on from those very early compositions, Nico, yes. When you started to actually go and play on real drums and not yogurt tins, what was the approach you took in terms of, was it jumping at every opportunity that came out, or were you selective? Was there a particular area that you wanted to perform in?
I think it was very much born out of the times, the music around me. My whole family, as they're all musical and worked in the music industry or music business. My father was a lyricist. My mother was an excellent singer and worked in the record archives of the radio station. My uncle is a famous jazz bassist, Eberhard Weber. So music has always been around. And my father loved jazz and big band jazz, so there was a lot of that music around. But when I started to play drums, the teacher I had just said, he showed me a few things and said, just put on records and put on headphones and play along, which was great fun. It was excellent. And sort of in the time, there was sort of mid-70s, Weather Report, John McLaughlin, Mahavishnu Orchestra, Billy Cobham, who was then the first drummer that I thought, I want to be able to play like him. That's cool. So that sort of, yeah, I was that was the music of the day, and I did like it. And my first band was sort of like that, not quite as good, but in spirit.
In spirit was excellent, and it was on the way, on the approach. Was composition part of your initial performance gigs?
Yes. With the band, the first band, I properly had to. I think I must have been 14, 15, something like that. Yes, we all played. We didn't play any covers. I think no one did. Like all the amateur bands of our age, they all played their own compositions. There was no, but not as far as I was aware. We're all trying to do sort of be better than the more interesting than the next band sort of thing. It's a very creative time. I do actually remember some of the songs, or if I hear them, like, yeah, I think I know, you know, what the next part is, what the next part is.
Oh, right. Oh, wow. Well, your composition continued, of course, and you've composed for many years, but there was an album that you composed a number of pieces for back in 1989 with Gebhard Ullmann. The album, I've actually got a copy of it because I thought, that looks interesting. And I looked at it and I thought, I wonder what it's called. And I can't see anything other than it's the name of the artist, Gebhard Ullmann, Enrico Rava, Andreas Willers, Martin Lilik, and Nicholas Schoblay.
Yes, it's actually recorded in Holland in a place with a great name, Monster. Which means Munster, but anyway, it's a good and a great studio. There was a discussion about how to call, should the album have a name? The band without Enrico had a name after the first album we did, and that was named after an Eric Dolphy album called Out to Lunch. So yes, we were Out to Lunch, but we didn't want to have Out to Lunch featuring Enrico Rava. And we sort of went the jazz way, like many jazz albums. Well, they sort of have names, but a lot of them are basically the names of the people. And then there was a decision that we didn't want it to make look like an Enrico Rava album. So that's why on the cover, he's on the second, on the second line, but in a different color, which actually the album cover was my design.
Oh, right.
Which I did with coloured paper and glue and scissors.
Is that how it was done?
And then it was scanned in, yes. So that was sort of the compromise, you know, so he does stick out, but he's not on the top of the names of the credits. So
I'm just going to call it Nabel 4632.
Yeah, you wrote that. You mean, oh, which album is that? So I had to Google it.
Too long a name of the album to write. There's a number of items, a number of pieces that you've contributed to the album in terms of the composition, including a thing called 18 Arabs.
Yes, I think that's sort of fairly indicative of a lot of my composition in that it's, in its essence, is not a complicated piece of music. They're not oodles of different parts, which is interesting because if I sort of think back at the music, you know, in the mid-70s where I started playing and writing, that was all very complex music. You know, if you listen to the Mahavishnu Orchestra or, you know, many other bands at that time, that was very complex, layered and interesting music and hard to play and all. So that piece was very simple, and it's all based around a bass line that was 18 beats long. And that was on the album, which was we recorded at the end of a little tour, which was the first time I played with Enrico. And we recorded that in a studio in, as I said, in Monster with a great engineer. And this was actually our soundcheck piece. So we set up and we said, let's record a bit to see how it sounds, if we get, you know, if all the levels are, you know, all that sort of thing. And all to tape, you know, multi-track tape. And then we played it once through, and that's what you get. That was the first piece.
It's great to listen to. We played at the top of the program today, Nico. Why don't we just have a listen to a couple of seconds of it now just to refresh our memory. 18 Arabs from Nabel 4632.
So that was quite a buzz recording in that studio because the engineer Max Bollemann, he recorded many albums with Dutch artists, German artists, but also a lot of the American artists. So I think Art Blakey's last four or five albums were done. He recorded Elvin. I know. So he was, it's always sort of slightly scary to record in a place like that. And he was full of stories. Is there time I can tell a little story that he told me?
You may indeed.
I will never forget that. It left a very big impression. I often think of it and I often talk about it, especially in workshops or talking to students. He and a friend of his, they were big fans of Cannonball Adderley's. And because at that stage, maybe Cannonball hadn't played in Europe, or, you know, it was hard to see them. So he and his friend decided they wanted to see him live, and the only way to do it was to travel to New York. And, of course, they didn't have much money, and flying was out of the question. So they got a job on a merchant vessel and worked on the ship on their way over to New York, which I think takes a week or 10 days, something like that. And when they arrived in New York, they hopped off the ship for an evening and went to the club where Cannonball played. I'm not sure how old they were, but it was a bit difficult to get into the club. I think it might have been also a club in Harlem somewhere. So there was the two probably pasty-faced, Dutch guys, young, probably underage, trying to get into a club, into a jazz club. But somehow they prevailed upon the man on the door and got in, and they were seated at a table. And unbeknownst to them, the word had been given to Cannonball that there was these two young Dutch guys who worked at the ship just to come and see him play. So in the set break, he comes over, he sits at the table with them, has a chat, and then asks them, have you got any requests? We'll play. And I always think, now I want to hear Cannonball. I can go to my CD collection and all that sort of stuff, but you could also go on, some well-known service where it's for free and you press a button. And the experience of having, that's an extreme story, right? But if something is difficult to obtain, you get a lot more value, so to speak, out of it. It means so much more to you, and you're listening in a different way. And you can even get, that experience. It's how wonderful. How wonderful.
The feeling they must have had to have taken this huge trip, this huge chance, then actually got into the club, so they would have been thrilled just to be there. But to have Cannonball come over and actually speak to them, that's
yes, and play a request.
That is a beautiful story. And then they would have had to travel all the way back again.
Yep, they did.
Well, look, they certainly worked hard for that gig.
Yes.
But well, and what a beautiful story about what music meant to them and how they were able to work through part of that meaningfulness.
Yes, absolutely. Because we're all like people of sort of our age. It kind of come across as sort of the good old days talking, but it certainly made you appreciate music in a different way. If you had to go and order a record, it cost you a whole month's pocket money, and you had to hop on the bus after 2 weeks when it finally arrived, and you carry it home. And the first time you put it on, it's just a different experience from pressing, from clicking a mouse.
Oh, it is, certainly is. And I think that might be part of the reason why vinyl seems to be making a bit of a comeback, because it's something practical that you actually have to touch and feel and look after.
Yes. And it's you have to put it on, you have to make a decision. There's not much decision on a phone, really.
Not much at all. No. Now, quirky is one way that some of your compositions can be defined, and we're going to have a chat about a little bit of a quirky project, you might call it, perhaps, that's coming up shortly. But we'll have a listen to a piece of music first to get us in the mood for quirkiness. This is a piece that you've selected.
It's the title piece of an album recorded in Berlin, I think it was in 2009, with some friends, great musicians and good friends in Berlin, and an Australian musician, Adrian Sheriff, who I think is one of the greatest trombone players in the world. And the other musicians, they're not so great, but they're fantastic. Christian Kappe on trumpet, Christoph Griese, a long-time collaborator. He was one of the first musicians I met when I moved to Berlin in 1981. On saxophone, Burkhard Jasper, wonderful, wonderful piano player, and Horst Nonnenmacher, in Hales, from the same area as I am, and we share a birthday. That was a recording at the radio station in Berlin, Radio Berlin Brandenburg. The song Es geht and the album Es geht in German means it works, it is possible. So, yes.
My guest is drummer, composer, arranger, music producer and sound recording engineer Nico Schobler. You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
On Joy 94.9, this is Bent Notes, where my guest is drummer, composer, arranger, music producer and sound recording engineer, Nico Schobler. Nico, the world has been a very strange and different place over the last 3 to 4 months. Huge impact on the arts community. What have you seen as the most challenging part of isolation for a musician, and also for a business that relies upon the musicians doing their work?
As a musician, I think the biggest part is obviously not being able to play concerts, which, you know, you lose a bit of contact to your audience. Also, to play together with other musicians, that is a big part, where you realise that even an interruption, even if, you know, now 2-3 months, which doesn't sound that long, but it, sort of a certain, you know, not that the edge goes away, but some things that you take for granted and just flow easily, they become, all of a sudden, you start having to think, or something starts working. I don't know if that'd be the same as if you would just stop talking for 3 months and then you would hold a public speech, you know, impromptu, you know, where you stumble over the grammar or you think, is that the right word? That sort of thing. Yeah. It all comes back, but it is quite surprising how some subtleties that you take for granted do go away for a bit at least. Mm-hmm. And in terms of business, yes, like many businesses, if you rely on people coming in and they can't come in, well, there is no business, because a lot of artists do not get, you know, JobKeeper as they should. So that puts us all. So it has definitely, business has slowed down. I'm lucky that I still have some business, because you can mix and master remotely. We've been finishing off some albums. Yep. That had been recorded. I have little smaller groups or single performance coming, singer-songwriters, vocal overdubs, voiceovers, that sort of thing happens. I've started a very interesting collaboration with an electronic music artist over in Perth.
Oh, right.
So that's a project that would have to be done in isolation, so to speak, COVID or not.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just a bit far to go. And that has been extremely interesting, and it's branching out now potentially into video and virtual reality. So that's been fascinating and great fun. And I've also had the good fortune that I got some commissions to write, compose and arrange works for mainly big bands overseas. So,
oh, wow.
So that's you know, in a way, that's good. There's something I always love to do, and you sort of never have time. And it's like, oh, I'd love to do that. And now I'm doing it again. So they're good. There's a good thing.
What have you been doing from a musician's perspective to keep yourself ready to return to that live performance?
Thinking about it. I do a bit of practice. Well, not enough, I think, as I sort of found out, or I sort of knew. Yesterday we did a recording for the Melbourne Jazz Co-op with Mirko Gherini's quartet, the Horizontal Quartet, with Andrea Keller and Tamara Murphy. And that will be on, I think, Sunday week. People can get a ticket to that. I'm sure the link will go up. And that was terrific, but also sort of, yeah, that was sort of a scary moment where we all thought, oh, okay. So none of us have played with anyone live for quite a while. So that's how that goes. I remember now. So, yeah, so some practice. Yeah, the playing together, you can't practice, and you can't do it over the internet. The whole ensemble playing does not work over the internet.
No, it's really, as much as we might see all these ensemble videos, they're individual people playing in their own individual place to a click track, basically.
Yes, and for some things that's great and it's fine, and some very interesting and quirky also things come up, but it's not playing together. Yes.
Yeah. And you're going to enable some more quirkiness on Sunday, June 28 at the Jazz Lab when you're actually going to take the real live stage for the first time in quite some time with a group called Then This.
Very exciting. The project has started. I looked it up. It's actually 2 years ago. Can't believe it. and it's a project without bass. So it's a project without any bass, but with basses. it's guitar with Steve Magnusson, Mirko Guarini on saxophone, and Tony Hicks on saxophone and probably other implements.
Yes.
That was quite sort of a targeted project. I've had several experiences and continue to playing in groups without bass. I mean, there's, for example, there's Torio with also Mirko and Paul Grabowski. The latest incarnations of Tibet and Dixie were often without bass. And that sort of came out of the fact that the bass player who had played in the band, it was so integral that he wouldn't – that was Chris Becker I'm talking about. He couldn't do quite a lot of the gigs because he started touring internationally and all that. Music can be such a personal thing that it doesn't matter how good another player is. I don't want another player. So what do I do? We'll play without him. And that's a very interesting experience as a band, because first you start to try to compensate, which is the wrong thing. It doesn't work. You can't compensate for an instrument in a way, and especially not for a particular player. So you develop a way of playing, and then you find out what is possible, and then other things become possible. So this was a sort of a project that I want to do that again. And although there is, with the guitar, there's a chord bass or instrument that can play chords as well, it's essentially three polyphonic voices. So that's the idea behind it. And then plus a lot of it's very groovy and quirky rhythms and catchy themes and melodies that I tend to write at times.
My first thought, Nico, is that the bass always seems to be a significant part of the, for want of a better word, the bass of the music. It seems a bit strange that we take such a foundation instrument out and we continue to have great music. How does that work?
I mean, a lot of instruments have, you know, sort of a range of that, like, not quite as low as the bass, but like a guitar can also sound, you know, bass. Like if you play guitar, someone plays a guitar solo, they will often have, you know, a bass notes if they play chords, or they can accompany themselves, you know, with some with the bass lines and all that. The piano has a range as big as the bass. So what tends to happen if you have an instrument like the guitar or the piano without the bass is that harmonically things can shift quite rapidly and quite unpredictably, which that happens a lot with when I play with Paul and Mirko. And because you can't do that, not even with the best bass player, like, because it will sound wrong. And if your left hand goes in to a different chord, a different bass note, and the bass player, well, you can't anticipate that. So that doesn't work. For me, I think melody and rhythm are always more important than harmony, and often harmony and chords in my songs are sort of coincidental, or they happen because of how the melodies work at that moment. I never sit down and have a chord progression and then try to write a melody over the top of it.
Get the melody right and then put some quirkiness underneath it.
Yes. Yes.
So Then This is performing at the Jazz Lab, one of the first gigs back at the Jazz Lab on June 28. I think that's the end of the first week of gigs, isn't it, at the Jazz Lab?
Yes.
June 28, which is a Sunday. Yeah, so you'll be in competition with us, Nico.
Maybe we can put a radio on top of the piano.
Oh, no, there's a thought, yeah.
A live broadcast the other way around.
Exactly. So if you want more information about the gig, we can go to jazzlab.club. If we want more information about Nico, we can go to pughousestudios.com. Okay, thank you so much for chatting to me here on Bent Notes about your early career, meaningfulness of music, and, of course, then this. It has been a real privilege and a pleasure to once again chat with you.
So good to be back. Thank you.
My guest has been drummer, composer, arranger, music producer, and sound recording engineer, Nico Chablais. You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.